The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Andrew Brady plays bassoon, and in 2013, fresh out of conservatory, he earned the job as principal bassoonist in the Louisiana Philharmonic, and since January 2016, he has held the position of principal bassoon in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. As a teenager, the Johnson City, Tennessee native appeared on the public radio program From the Top, and he went on to earn his degree from the Colburn School Conservatory in 2013. Andrew Brady joins me on Zoom to talk about his life as a professional musician. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
So first things first, though, how have you been doing during this past year during COVID quarantine?
There have been many ups and downs.
Yeah.
As I'm sure we've all experienced. For now, I'm doing well, doing yeah. quite well. When the pandemic, you know, kind of first descended upon us, we were in the height of our season here in Atlanta, and to be honest, I wasn't sure how I was going to make it to the end of the season. There were so many large pieces and, you know, like Missa Solemnis and Beethoven 7 and taking Missa Solemnis to Carnegie Hall and then Rite of Spring, Prokofiev 5, Tchaikovsky 6, just one after the other. And I was wondering, like, how am I going to get through this? Yeah. And I don't want to say that it definitely was not a huge positive that the pandemic came and shut everything down, but it did give me kind of the space that I needed because I was getting a little burnt out. So it was disappointing, but also helpful to have that time and space. And then, you know, I descended into the sitting on the couch way too much, eating too many snacks, watching TV, and binging all the terrible shows. So I did that for a while, and then we had news that our season in Atlanta for this past season would be, you know, happening in some form, no live audiences. We've just been recording for digital release. So that kind of gave me hope, and, you know, I was practicing more diligently and routinely. After I got off the couch and was eating way too much food, I decided it'd be a good idea to get an elliptical machine. So I did that. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to stay regular on that. It's not always the easiest, but but I'm trying. So currently I'm quite busy. So it feels almost like a return to normal life. I got vaccinated almost 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I have a recital coming up in the last 2 weeks of the orchestra season with Mahler 4 and Tchaikovsky 5. Oh. And then this summer is going to be like summer's past, where I'm just going all over the place, teaching, playing. So it's feeling more like normal, but also that means some of the stresses are coming back. Yeah. So I'm trying to navigate, you know, I had such freedom and space, and I wasn't feeling as anxious this past year just because I had more room to really live and not rush from one thing to the other. So I'm trying to figure out how I can bring that headspace to what's coming up. So
spending a little more time on the elliptical or whatever, kind of getting that stress out.
Yes, for sure.
So I understand that saxophone was your first instrument. How did you get started in music playing the saxophone? And then what made you switch to playing the bassoon?
So my whole family's musical. My older sister plays saxophone. My middle sister played clarinet. So I grew up hearing my older sister practicing her saxophone. And I just loved listening to her play. And we had an extra saxophone at the house. And so when it was time to choose, you know, chorus, orchestra, or band. And we've pretty much always been a band family, even though we have singers. So I thought band was the way to go. And since we had an extra saxophone and I, you know, heard my sister practicing so much, I was like, that's the right thing to do. Yeah. So I played that for 2 years, sixth and seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And then around that time, I really started listening more to orchestras. And I forget what site it was. It might have been the Juilliard like admissions site or something. And they had like a clip from Beethoven 6, and I would just go and like click on it over and over again. It was the I forget which movement, the with the oboe, ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-da-da, and then the bassoon, bum, bum, bum. And so I just heard those double reeds, and I was like, oh, that's so cool, I want to do that. Wow. So I realized, like, well, saxophone's not going to really get me into an orchestra unless it's Prokofiev.
Mio.
So, yeah, or Mio, yeah. I started looking for other instruments, and I was at a regional band clinic playing saxophone, sitting behind a bassoonist, and I saw the thumb keys, and I was like, that looks really cool and interesting, and like there's only one person playing it. So I just saw it. I couldn't hear it, because in a band of like, you know, 100 people, you're not going to hear one bassoon even if he's sitting in front of you. So I just thought it looked cool and went to the band director and said I wanted to play it.
Wow, that's like a band director's dream, basically.
Right.
You want to play the bassoon?
Like, are you sure?
Wow. But this is a great example, because what I noticed really in all of the reading I was doing about you, you're very, very self-motivated. I mean, that's very, very clear. And it, from what I understand, also, you pretty much taught yourself to play the bassoon, at least in the beginning. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm such a nerd, self-admitted nerd, and I'm fine with it. So before I was able to get an instrument, really, and before I was able to take some lessons with the band director just to get me started, I was just so already in love with this instrument. And so I went online. There's a site called Woodwind Fingering Guide that has all the fingerings for different instruments. Yeah. And I printed out the fingerings for bassoon and started memorizing before I had an instrument in my hands. So when I got it, you know, I could hit the ground running.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Now, you know, I think people know the sound of the instrument without necessarily knowing that it's a bassoon they're hearing, you know, this Peter and the Wolf and the Rite of Spring and all. But will you talk a little bit about the bassoon? You know, can you kind of give the little quick tutorial about the instrument?
Sure. So for those that don't know, it's the lowest sounding orchestral woodwind with its partner, the contrabassoon. So it's got, you know, lower range. And I was really drawn to the kind of earthy sound. And bassoonists like to speak about tone, and we say it has a nutty quality. I don't know how that translates to it. For some reason, we all just talking to other bassoonists, they're like, oh yeah, this instrument really has that kind of nutty sound, like wooden, oaky kind of. And it's hard to translate, but that's what I was drawn to. That, and I feel like it's such a vocal instrument. It's, you know, right in the range of like a baritone tenor, which kind of fits my vocal range if I were to sing, which I don't in public these days. So I just felt like I could express my voice through the bassoon really well. Just very lyrical instrument. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are there any particular or unique challenges to playing the instrument? It seems like it would be a particularly difficult instrument to play.
Yes, what I did not know when I started was that reeds were going to be such a challenge. So I make my own reeds. I used to go through the whole process, you know, like cutting my own tubes and profiling and gouging and pre-gouging and all of that stuff. Now it's just a little too busy for me, since I'm preparing, you know, three programs at a time, weeks in advance. So I buy my cane. I actually have some sitting right here. I buy it processed already.
Oh,
I know you can't see that on the people that are listening, but so I buy my cane pre-processed, and then I just have to do the final stages. But even with all of that, you know, work at the beginning cut out, it's still a hard, challenging process because the yield is so low of things that I find acceptable to play on, even just for practicing at home, but definitely for performance at the hall. Mm-hmm. So that's one big thing that I did if I were to speak to my younger self, I wouldn't say don't play bassoon because I love it. It's my favorite, but I would say just keep an eye out for these reeds coming down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. You end up with a second hobby basically.
Pretty much.
So do you remember that moment when you just really knew that music is your life's work? Do you remember what that turning point was, what that moment was like?
I think I always knew, like, pretty early on. I don't remember a particular moment where I was, I guess when I switched to bassoon and I had made the decision I want to play in an orchestra. But even before that, I knew I wanted to do something with music. Like I said, I grew up in a musical family. Everybody sings. Yeah. My grandmother on my dad's side had a little group of four women, church ladies. Their names were the Harmonettes. Oh. Yeah, and they would go from church to church and sing. And then my grandmother on my mom's side, she would sing at churches, and I sang in the church choir. And uh-huh. I had two aunts that actually sang on Broadway in Ain't Misbehavin' and South Pacific. Wow. So they were in New York, and then one aunt also did, you know, was touring around the world.
Wow.
So music was always there. And I just knew early on, like I would come home from church and I would have invited some people over to our front porch for me to give a concert to them.
Wow.
And it was basically just me singing solo what the choir had already sung that day at church. So it wasn't anything new. It's just like, well, now you get to come see me do it on my front porch.
The encore.
The
encore.
Yeah, exactly. But I wouldn't always tell my parents that, you know, people were coming. So they'd come knock on the door. And my parents would be like, well, we just saw you at church. Like, what are you doing here? And, oh, we're here for Andrew's concert.
Oh, wow.
So I knew.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I know that you mentioned that you really looked up to your sisters and who made music, but who are some of the other people that you most admire? What musicians or otherwise?
Well, I think both my grandmothers, I'm actually in the process of commissioning a piece based on a poem that my maternal grandmother wrote.
Oh.
So very much looking forward to that. I think we should be recording it next spring around this time. So they definitely were huge inspirations. My first bassoon teacher, apart from, you know, the beginning lessons I had with my band director, his name is Anthony Parnther. He's out in Los Angeles now, and mm-hmm. he's conducting and playing in the studios and all of that. But at the time he was in Tennessee, and it was so special to me. And I didn't really realize it after it took some years later, but he is an African-American Black man. And for me to have a teacher and a role model that looked like me, mm-hmm. I didn't realize it, like how rare it is. And he was playing in the Johnson City Symphony. He was playing principal, and I got to see him, you know, in that role. I later on in my 10th and 11th maybe grade years, he would ask me to sub with the Johnson City Symphony, and so I'd play second sitting next to him.
Wow.
So he really taught me a lot about, I mean, not only bassoon, but just how to exist in this industry where there aren't many people that look like me. It's getting better, but he really gave me a lot of information and kind of know-how, and I will always respect him for that.
Yeah. And, you know, you get these great gigs, you know, very, very early on. So that was important. That was important training or important mentoring.
Yes.
So if you don't mind my asking, how is that working out in Atlanta? How does that feel? How is it working out for you?
Yeah, it's great. This is my fifth season, but I've been here. So now it's starting to feel more, routine sounds like it's a negative, more comfortable, yeah. I guess, because there's a lot of learning. Even though I'd had 2.5 years on the job in New Orleans before I came to Atlanta, you know, I played some of the rep before, but there was a huge increase in the number of subscriptions, classical subscriptions each season. And there was a lot of learning going on. There's still a lot of learning, but you know, like we just did Dvorak 7 last week, and I'd already played it a couple times before, and we have Tchaikovsky 5 coming up and Mahler 4, and I've played those a few times, and it's getting to the point where I see parts coming back to me from the library that have my own writing in them. So yeah, it's just like a little reassurance, like, oh, you've done this before, and still, you know, definitely practicing and striving to be better than the last time I played it, but it's not like everything is super new. So I'm loving that aspect. I feel like I can breathe a little bit more and bring a little bit more of myself to each piece, whereas before it was just like, you know, right rhythms, right notes, like, not to say that I was not encouraged to be expressive, but I was just, you know, kind of under the gun with the tenure process, you know, really trying to make sure that I was well prepared. But now I'm feeling like I have a little bit more space. And not only that it was given to me, but I feel like I'm more comfortable in taking more space. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I think there's a lot more room to grow still, but it's feeling more comfortable.
Good, good.
Yeah.
So I learned about you when I found your senior recital video online, and it was from May 2013 at the Colburn School, and you were playing a sonata by Telemann, and it was phenomenal, and it was so impressive and so gorgeous, so, you know, just so transcendent, really, and that was what made me want to know more about you. And then when we exchanged, you know, plans to have this conversation, you told me that you even at one point considered going into historical performance instead of orchestral work, and that you also said you play a lot of Baroque recorder and you sort of aspire to get yourself a Baroque bassoon. So I'd love to hear more about that, you know, hear what interest you have in Baroque music.
Sure. So I guess my real love for Baroque music started early on, like when I, eighth grade and high school, my mom is was a preschool teacher. And so after school was over, I would ride the bus to her school while she was doing her, you know, planning for the rest of the week or whatever. And, you know, you can't really go anywhere on the internet on school computers. And so I remember we could play like the pinball game or we could listen to the radio. And that was like about it, apart from like preschool learning games. So I would listen to the radio. And one of the stations was very heavily Baroque. And I didn't really think about it or realize it at the time. But now that I'm kind of going back, I think that's where it really first started. Just loved hearing the sound of the strings. And so, yeah, I bought a couple CDs after I had gotten a job and, you know, had spending money. And they were, you know, Vivaldi. They were the kind of like introductory, like best of Vivaldi and, you know, Haydn, and which is, I mean, it's good for it. It definitely got me hooked. So I've loved Baroque for a long time. At the end of my undergrad, I was considering going into Baroque and maybe going over to Europe and studying Baroque performance practice there. Or, you know, Juilliard has Ensemble 415, I think it's called. Really good Baroque training program. And so I had a conversation with my teacher. And it was, you know, there are kind of three paths where I think you could go right now. One is like the competition path. If you want to do like ARD or other big international competitions, which solo performance has never really been my huge love. I really like being in an ensemble and kind of feeding off of what everyone else around me is doing. So that didn't really stick out to me. And then there was, you know, take orchestral auditions. And I was like, all right, I can get behind that. It was always my dream to land a big orchestra job. Back when I was studying with Anthony, he had me like write down research and write down bassoon sections of the top five American and top five European orchestras. And I had them like memorized. I knew where all of them went to school. So I was very much into that. And then the other option was go to Europe, do or Juilliard and do Baroque performance study. And at that time, it was a tough decision, but there were a lot of auditions happening then. So I figured, well, why not go ahead and just take them now and see what happens? So I ended up going the orchestral route, and I actually won the audition for Louisiana Phil the week of graduation from Colburn. So very opportune timing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a dream for an orchestral player. That's just extraordinary. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
You have also this other side of you that I really want to talk about, if you're willing to talk about the Harmony Project's Youth Orchestra Los Angeles program, where you were assisting underserved teens learning to play the bassoon, and also a longtime volunteer with Meals on Wheels, and probably some other things too. It really seems to me, it's very clear that giving back to the community and being part of the community is really important to you. Where'd that come from?
I mean, my parents, we live in Johnson City, Tennessee. It's kind of a city where you know most everyone and everybody's interconnected. And I grew up knowing my neighbors and helping them out when we needed to. And my parents, still, we have great family friends and neighbors, the McConnells. Mm-hmm. And my parents still take the meals whenever they need it and go do grocery shopping or whatever. They're both getting older. And so it's hard for them to get out. Mm-hmm. So I just saw that growing up, and we did Meals on Wheels through my church. Mm-hmm. And so it was just something that I did.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I got to meet so many people. There was a lady who called me her boyfriend, and every time I went to see her, my boyfriend's here. So yeah, I just really enjoyed connecting with people. Yeah. And then in Los Angeles, I loved working with Yola. Those kids were really special, and a lot of them had just recently switched to bassoon. I think there were a couple that played flute and then switched to bassoon. And so just really helping them find the love for bassoon that I had. And one of them actually, she was a bassist. Well, still is a bassist, but she switched to bassoon and then switched back to bass. And I believe she went to Eastman School of Music and now has a podcast called Classically Black. And so she, doing really well. So yeah, it's fun to see these connections. Like, you know, you meet people and you have interactions, and later on you see where they go, and you're like, like maybe they played a small part in where I am, and maybe I played a small part in where they are.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's always just been really interesting me to try to connect with people. And I haven't really done too much since I've been in Atlanta. I worked with a youth orchestra here.
Oh.
And I was thinking during the pandemic, maybe I should get back into doing Meals on Wheels here. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to try to get into that again, especially since the schedule has been lighter. But then I also look at the the traffic and the accidents around Atlanta, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to get out of that. it could be crazy.
Yeah, but you were in LA before. Come on.
But I didn't drive some. I didn't have a car there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's true. That's true. So you have this wonderful gig as a principal bassoon in a renowned American orchestra, and you know, you're doing other gigs and whatnot. What else is on your radar? What other things do you want to do? What are you passionate about right now?
So I'm really passionate about this project that I'm doing. I talked about the commission with my grandmother's poem. So that's a project through Colburn, actually, and it's called Amplify. And they're bringing back alumni, and I think maybe also some current people that work. I think there's a dance. Me and a bassist, Marlon Martinez, who were both in the same class at Colburn. And then I forget I think there's a dancer, and I forget who the other person is for this year's installment. But so we're basically given free rein almost to kind of craft a project or many projects that involve the Colburn community and the classical community at large, or jazz or dance or arts, let's say arts community. So I've already spoken to a couple of their like career development classes and audience and community engagement classes. Because of the pandemic, I wasn't able to go and do a residency, but next, I think April or May, I'm going to go do a residency at Colburn, do master classes, lessons, a performance, And then kind of the big capstone is a recording, and it's going to be music all by African-American composers. Oh, cool. And I'm commissioning a piece based on a poem that my grandmother wrote. And it wasn't written about me, but it just really speaks to me. It felt like she was writing to me.
Wow.
So I'm really looking forward to working on that. I found the composer that I want to work with, and we have a talk coming up soon to kind of, you know, flesh out some ideas.
Oh, so. Wow. Do you, I mean, I'm putting you on the spot, but do you have the poem handy, or do you have it committed to memory that you could share it?
Part of it? It should be somewhere here.
Because that would really be special to be able to hear that. And will this be will it be sung or narrated, or?
I'm thinking at the moment it will just be bassoon and piano. Oh. Some more bass, like no text really.
Gotcha.
Let's see if I can find it. I know how to search for it. But it really spoke to me, my experience, you know, growing in the South as a gay Black man.
Mm-hmm.
And so, let's see. Oh, yes. It's called My Young Friend. And it was written in, March 31st of 1982.
Okay.
So, my young friend, born with two spirits, one to wander free, another to be confined or condemned by society. To hear the call of the gentle doe, stroke the softness of her fur, yet long to be beckoned by the dominating buck, to lie with him as with her. To know the feelings of guilt, pounding the shoreline of the soul, to writhe in agony, searching for answers, till the brain is depleted and cold. To confide in friends, friends you trust, find them condemning you at every shoal. Little wonder you feel hurt and misplaced, times feeling no one cares enough to give you space. I love you, accept you as you are, pray one day your divided spirits find a meeting place.
Wow. My goodness. Wow.
I saw that. And I was just, I had my sister send, grandmother has books and books of her poetry. And I had my sister send a couple, and I saw that one. I was just like,
wow,
that's the one.
Yeah. I mean, that is a big wow. That's a big, powerful wow.
And
can I ask, do you still have your grandma? Is she?
No,
oh.
No. Both of my grandmothers passed years ago.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, but boy, she's looking down on you, and she's proud of that. That's amazing.
I'm very excited to honor her through this. Yeah. It's going to be a great project.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
Thank you.
I have been speaking with Andrew Brady on Zoom. He is principal bassoon player in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, a position he has held since January of 2016. Thank you so much for your time, and all the best to you. Thanks. It's been so delightful to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this has been great.